I'm Mark Brazell, and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 and 88.5, where it's time to go on the money with Chris DeSimeo.
Well, the markets were back to their volatile ways last week after being closed for Memorial Day. The streak of winning Tuesdays, as far as the bulls were concerned, continued. That makes it 20 in a row with a triple-digit gain as things got underway last week. That was followed by a triple-digit loss on Wednesday as concerns about potentially rising interest rates if the Fed begins to taper out of its purchases of securities weighed on the market. On Thursday, we got a peek at first-time claims for unemployment. They were up 10,000. That came as a bit of a surprise, as did the GDP figures. The revision for the first quarter's growth was 2.4%. The market had been expecting 2.5% as concerns over just what the sequester might do in terms of weighing on the economy began to spread through the market. Well, it's never a bad time to take a step back and understand the basics of financial planning. Investing, of course, is just one element. It involves an entire smorgasbord of different disciplines. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Dave Foster. Dave is a certified public accountant, a certified financial planner, has been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, among other places. And he was recently named by the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, the NAPFA, as one of the 30 most influential financial advisors in the United States. And Dave, thanks for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Thanks for inviting me again, Chris. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, Dave, you know, you've been in this business how many years now?
25, I guess. I'm since like 1989.
Okay. Okay, and of course at your firm, Foster & Motley, and there will be a link to your firm's website from the WVXU.org website. Your firm specializes in fee-only planning. You know, in the 25 years you've been involved in this field, how has the advance in technology changed the way average investors and average people approach the world of finances?
Speaking of technology primarily?
Yeah, well, the technology and just the and the media and you know, it used to be that people didn't talk about money before. Now it seems like it's on everyone's mind.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, you know, probably one of the big things is just the ability to people to log on every night and see their 401k balance or see their account balance at their brokerage firm or whatever. And I believe that's been a bit of a two-edged sword. I still will claim that one of the worst things that ever happened was the 800 number to change your 401k allocations at night based on the evening news. You know, I mean, I just think people overreact sometimes to things they hear or things their neighbor tells them. So that's kind of the negative of that all, you know, being able to see that. The good news is, hey, people are more aware. They can see what's going on. They have a lot of the technology has allowed people to track their progress better. Clearly, there's some, you know, the whole Quicken thing was probably pretty new in 1989. I mean, it existed, but it was pretty rough. But see, now there's the Mint.com and just all sorts of places that people, if they're willing to make a little effort, can track their cash flow, their investments, you name it.
Yeah.
Pretty easy nowadays.
Yeah, hold a checkup to their smartphone and have it instantly deposited into a bank. With the advances in technology, with ever sophisticated financial planning tools available online or via CD-ROM or application on your iPad, the question I guess comes up: if all this information and all this firepower is available, why do people still pay personal financial planners and accountants a fee if all this information's out there?
Well, what's the old, there's information and there's wisdom and knowledge and that sort of thing, and they're definitely very different. Some of it is just, it's not that different than hiring a personal trainer for your fitness. I mean, you just need somebody to instill a little discipline, somebody who's objective and can remove some of the emotion from it. I mean, I think that applies more to planners than, say, accountants. Mostly for accountants and that sort of thing, you're really buying technical expertise, and Lord knows you need it with the complexity of the tax laws and whatnot. But for us in planning, a lot of what we do is help people really just, figure out goals and nail down some of the things they want to do, things that maybe they couldn't articulate themselves, or maybe as a couple they were struggling with figuring some of these things out, and then developing a plan, and then trying to be disciplined about executing.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do on your own.
It is. And sometimes having that objective third party helping you not only articulate your goals and help you then quantify them, but then help you prioritize, because one person's desire for a brand new tractor with all the attachments might be in conflict with someone else's desire for a new addition to the house. And then so that's kind of what still can't be replaced then by a machine, by technology. Tell us, Dave, we've had this year an amazing market so far, as fears of the sequester, which of course then followed the fears of the budget fiscal cliff. We've had a pretty remarkable year so far. And yet we're also now operating under a new set of tax laws. And there are some that took effect this year. There are some that are going to be taking place next year. Tell us what is changed in the world of taxation for investment income. In other words, dividends used to get preferential treatment. Has that changed for anyone? And that's kind of where we'd like to develop.
Well, dividends and long-term capital gains, qualified dividends and long-term capital gains, still do get preferential treatment. And it really hasn't changed a whole lot from 2012, other than the folks at the much higher end of the income spectrum. So there is still, and a lot of people forget about this 0% bracket on qualified dividends and capital gains if you're in the lowest tax bracket. So for a married couple filing joint, that's about $75,000 of taxable income, let's say. And then after that, for someone with higher taxable income than that, it's basically a 15% rate on long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. At $450,000 of income, and I'm speaking married filing joint here.
Taxable income, too. This is net of after your deductions and exemptions and so forth.
In this case, yes, it is.
Okay.
So once you get above a certain threshold, which is pretty doggone high, frankly, $450,000, I mean, that's well into the 1% category that everybody talks about or whatever. So then it's a 20% rate. The complicating thing is this new 3.8% Medicare surtax that came in, actually not with the most recent tax bill, but with the Affordable Care Act. So there is just this extra 3.8% tax on, broadly speaking, investment income that kicks in at $250,000 of adjusted gross income.
For married,
not taxable
income. For married filing jointly.
Married filing, yeah, it's $200,000 for individual taxpayers. So essentially, you can add 4% on to, you know, and I said long-term capital gains might be at 15%. Well, maybe it's, you know, 18.8 or 19 to make it simple. Dividends are really at 19, not 15 for
okay.
A lot of folks. So that's a big deal. That extra 4% is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, Dave, there used to be a calculation that was done in determining how much of someone's Social Security income was subject to tax that kind of added back in to your regular income the income derived from an otherwise tax-free instrument, namely a municipal bond. Does municipal bond income count in that calculation for income as far as that 3.8% is concerned?
It is not subject to the 3.8%.
Okay.
So municipal bond income would not be considered, you know, subject to 3.8% surtax.
And this is in effect now?
2013, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
What else has changed, Dave, that people should be aware of as they try to, either exit the bond market to enter the world of dividend-paying stocks or decide to take some chips off the table because they've been in stocks for a while and now they want to take some, take some risk away? What else has changed?
Well, I mean, I think the age-old advice of don't let the, taxes drive the decision is still fair. Meaning, hey, if someone's experienced a run-up in a stock and they think it's a good time to sell, well, sell it. And if you end up paying 18 or 19% long-term capital gains tax, it's better than watching it run back down. I mean, or if it's time to rebalance, then rebalance. I mean, you know, so that's still valid. Beyond that, what I would say for folks in, you know, with more complex tax situations is you just got to sort of run the numbers. I mean, you either got to have some software that you that you're comfortable with, or you got to have a professional helping you, because there are so many things that interplay now. This Medicare surtax, phased outs of deductions that we haven't even talked about, and exemptions. It used to be easy for me to say to somebody, oh, well, yeah, I can eyeball their stuff and say, well, that'll cost you 15% Fed and 6% Ohio, and go ahead. You just can't do that nowadays. I mean, you bump into all these different brackets that it's hard to, to really figure out the true tax cost of a transaction.
Yeah, so we all kind of are feeling like the investment equivalent of laboratory rats. Well, Dave, this has really flown right by again. I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your weekend and your labors at your firm of Foster & Motley. And again, congratulations on being named one of the 30 most influential people in the country in the world of personal financial planning. Dave Foster, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Chris.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeCineo on The Money.